So we've come to the book of the Divine Mother. In book 2, in the 15 cantos of book 2, King Aswapati had explored all the levels, planes of existence, and reached the highest plane of the manifestation. And had a very great realization there, the realization of cosmic mind, perhaps we can say. But then he found that all is too little that the world can give. The spirit has a sacred thirst. It's thirsting for something permanent, eternal, infinite, which is not to be easily found in the world. It's not there in the appearances, and or we don't perceive it easily in the forms and the movements of the manifestation. And in the first canto of this book, The Pursuit of the Unknowable, we read about how he came in contact with a vast, silent, infinite, eternal, one reality which is unthinkable, beyond the grasp of our mind or our senses, and yet we can in some way experience it. And that experience it's described in the first lines on page 310, the sense of liberation. Thought falls from us. We cease from joy and grief. The ego is dead. We are freed from being and care. We have done with birth and death and work and fate. All that seems to be finished, and the soul feels liberated, free. But we saw how then something says, O soul, it is too early to rejoice. Because you came into the world with a purpose. Now you seem to be leaving the world, and what have you done for that purpose for which you came? One was within thee who was self and world. What hast thou done for his purpose in the stars? Escape brings not the victory and the crown. And then that voice or that part of Aswapati asks, where is the bridge between the rapture and the calm? Where is the chamber where the glorious enemies kiss, the smile that saves, the golden peak of things? Where is that everlasting yes that says yes to everything in the universe? This too is truth at the mystic fount of life. So we'll continue from there. Anton, you'll start.
A black veil has been lifted. We have seen the mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. But who has lifted up the veil of light, and who has seen the body of the king. The mystery of God's birth and acts remains, leaving unbroken the last chapter's seal. Unsolved the riddle of the unfinished player. The cosmic player laughs within his mask, and still the last inviolate secret hides behind the human glory of a form, behind the gold in the form of a name.
Thank you. In this part here, Sri Aurobindo's using very symbolic images that are difficult for us to understand unless we've got a key to the symbolism. So let's try if we can understand what he means when he says, for example, a black veil has been lifted. Audrey.
I'm confused because I thought Ashvapati had a unique desire to go beyond.
Yes.
That it was him.
Yes.
That went beyond. But then this says, "What hast thou done for his purpose in the star?"
Who is talking to whom? Yes. Well, I think last week we said that since Sri Aurobindo doesn't put any quotation marks, it's difficult to be sure about it. But perhaps it's something in King Ashvapati himself. He's having this marvelous experience. There's this liberation. But as you say, from the very beginning, he had a purpose. And now, what about that purpose? How is that going to be fulfilled? So that's as if one part of himself is talking to himself, to him.
Yeah, so that's this business about the stare into thy eyes and kill thy heart. Where is the love?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And now it says we. So perhaps if we think that it's part of Ashvapati that's speaking, that part of him is saying that something has happened to us, this part and that part. No, I don't want to speculate what are those parts, but it says a black veil has been lifted, and we have seen the mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. So that must refer to this experience in the previous canto. The black veil, the veil of the ignorance, the veil of the limited being. No? When he has this sense of union with the with the unknowable through the sheer self-discovery of the soul, then this black veil has been lifted. And we've seen this, the shadow of some all-knowing Lord who is the ruler, creator of the universe. But he seems to be an unknowable reality. And then it asks, but there seems to be more. Now there seems to be a veil of light, this veil of unknowableness. And who is going to lift that up and show us the body of the king? Which I think refers to the idea that the universe in all its levels of substance is in fact the body of the Supreme. Mm-hmm. if there's that unknowable silence, unmoving, unchangeable, immutable, how and why has this universe come into being? And what is its purpose and its significance? The mystery of God's birth into the forms of the universe and his actions in the universe, that still remains. So it's as if we've been reading a book and we've come to the last chapter, but the last chapter, you know, in old books, you used to have to cut the pages. So the last chapter, the pages haven't been cut. You know, it's still sealed up. Or we're watching a drama and we haven't reached the last act yet. Well, the riddle of the unfinished play. The play is unfinished, so we haven't got the denouement. The mystery is still there. And it's as if the Lord is laughing at us. The cosmic player laughs within his mask. He's still wearing that mask of mystery. We can't see him. He's unknowable. And there's still a secret, an inviolate secret, a secret that hasn't been revealed. It's still unbroken, hidden. That secret is hiding behind a form, the human glory of a form, behind the gold eidolon of a name. This word eidolon, I think, I don't know whether that's really the correct pronunciation, but it's the way we pronounce it in English. And it's a Greek word. It's the Greek word from which we get our word idol. So it's an image of divinity. But a name, you know, there's a great name, we say, Sri Aurobindo. When we say it, we actually don't even know what it means, no? But it represents some great truth for us. So we can say God, or we can say the Lord, or whatever we like, we can say Brahma. It's an eidolon, it's a golden eidolon, it has some truth, but it's just a label. So it's as if this conversation or this contemplation is going on within King Aswapati himself, I think. You read on, Justin? Thank you. He's been aiming for something, for this large white line, perhaps this pure existence, perhaps we can say, which seems like a kind of horizon. But now he's reached where that horizon seemed to be, and he sees that the sun tracks. How to understand this? In a way, he's a hunter. Earlier in the poem, it said that he's a hunter in the tracks of light. That he's always trying to follow these tracks of light to find the truth, to find the ultimate reality. And he seemed to be aiming for Allah, this large white line. Now when he reaches that state of the self, the silent self, he sees that, or he senses that the tracks are going much further. They are leading along much further. So that which seemed to be the beginning and the end of everything, what he experienced in the previous canto, that Godhead of the whole, and everything was melting back into that as the end of everything, and proceeding again from that universal being or consciousness. No? Now he sees that that wasn't the end, that's just an opening up to a new stage in the journey. No? That seems to be a last step, a last bare step into eternity. An eye has opened upon timelessness, as if he's been given a power of vision that can see into the transcendent world beyond time and space. And it's as if he sees infinity reabsorbing into itself all the forms that have been projected as the universe. No? And whether it's through God's darkness, his unknowability, or whether it's that naked light that's just dazzling us, all these million rays, all these rays in which he's projected himself in as souls, as individual forms, they seem to be leading back into that sun of divine being and consciousness. And then he says there is a zero sign of the Supreme. And that's what was somehow experienced in the previous canto, as if it was a kind of a bare infinite, no? Formless, featureless, mute, uncreating, uncreated, and unborn, an immeasurable, luminous secrecy, infinite, eternal, unthinkable, alone. So all the great souls who have had this experience and come back to report about it, they report this feeling of something which is beyond anything that we can call existence or consciousness or bliss or any of that. It's just beyond everything. No? It's a zero sign. It's like an emptiness. This comes when we manage to free our consciousness from all the forms of nature. Nature left nude, naked, still, unmoving, uncovers God. That's the experience he had. But now he realizes that in that zero sign, in that grandiose nothingness, everything is there as potentiality.
Yes, ma'am. The body.
Sorry?
Body.
Her nature.
Nature.
So when those strong coverings from nature somehow get torn away from us, the soul's ignorance is destroyed. But not the soul. The soul is still there. And the soul recognizes that that nothingness is actually covering, veiling an immortal face. There's a presence. There's a being, a supreme being there. Helmut, would you read?
High and blank, negation is not all. A huge extinction is not God's last word, life's ultimate sense, the close of being's course. The meaning of this great mysterious word. In absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. Awaking, it can wake the transformed soul in the ray revealed of every sun. It can make the world a resting spirit's force. It can fashion in the clay world's perfect. Free the self is but one radiant face. Here to fulfill himself was God's
So it's just a few lines, no? But in this few lines, we can say is summed up the essence of Sri Aurobindo's message. So many spiritual paths, if we follow their teachings to their conclusion, they advise us to leave this world. And that the goal is to merge back into the oneness, or to merge into nirvana, a high and blank negation that says this world is not real, this world does not have any value in itself, maybe it's even an illusion, a dream. But here, Aswapati, I think if we are assuming that this is Aswapati's inner dialogue, he is sure that a huge extinction is not God's last word. No, that's not the ultimate meaning and significance of life. That's not the close of the course of existence in the world. It's not the meaning of this great mysterious world, this universe that we have been born into. When we reach that experience of absolute silence, if we are patient and open, after some time it reveals that it contains an absolute power. And if that power wakes up in us, then it can wake up that soul that is in a trance of silence and aloneness, no? In the ray, in the individual, it can reveal the whole of the sun, the whole of the sun of divine consciousness from which that ray has been emanated. And then the soul can experience that this whole world is a vessel, a container for the force of the Spirit. And it can shape in the clay, in matter, in the physical body, God's perfect shape. So what Asvapati has done, this freeing of the self, this liberation, he realizes this is just one step. It's a wonderful step, it's a radiant step, it's full of light. It's an essential step, because you can't take the second step until you've taken the first step. But the second step is the fulfillment. Here in the universe of matter, here to fulfill himself, was God's desire. And if we understand that, then the whole mystery of why we are here has a key, can be understood. And that, of course, is what Sri Aurobindo is explaining to us in the whole of the Life Divine, as well as in his many other works. We can just remember these last two lines. To free the self is but one radiant pace. Here to fulfill himself was God's desire. This is what makes Sri Aurobindo's yoga from all the other yogas, which aim at liberation of the self.
This passage is linked to the previous canto where on line 65,
yes,
the human mind must abdicate in life.
Yes. So he can't even have this experience unless the mind just annuls itself, surrenders completely. Then what he's having is a direct soul experience. The mind had earlier in Canto, 13, in the self of mind, it had some intuition of that state, but it wasn't able to realize it. So this is something that goes beyond mind. But because we are rays of that parent sun, it's possible if we come in contact with our psychic part, our immortal part, we can have this experience as Asvapati's having it.
The world, we can make the world, that world, the world being that divine mother, or
it's our world, no? Our world is a vessel of the Spirit's force, but we are not experiencing it like that. No? But if we have this experience, we can not only see it and know it like that, but we can also actively collaborate That is the point of the ray revealing the parent son. That through a liberated individual who has this experience, the Supreme can act directly in the world. At the moment, he works through all the limitations of our human nature and everything, all the forces of the universe. So this is a kind of transitional section linking the experience of Canto 1 with the experience that's now going to come in Canto 2. Something new is going to come now that he's had this realization and this little debate with himself and aspired for a different experience. Tekeste, you will read today?
Even while he stood on knees to make peace, and all the battle and seeking for the soul, as the expectations were sounded, featureless last, and presence in the world, for the subsequent new God, I caught the silence of the unbelief come out. A body of water and transition of justice. As if a sweet mystic surrounding of our soul, escaping the Buddha's original bliss, has come the land out of the eternal, someone came into and absolute. A being of wisdom, power and delight. Even as a mother, you as a child of her heart, took to her breast nature and world and soul.
Thank you. So this is much easier to understand. The language is much easier to understand. Anybody has any question?
Well, it says the presence he yearned for.
Yes.
Was he conscious that he was yearning for the mother?
Yes. Ever since, you remember, the end of Canto 14 in Book 2. There he had this revelation of the Universal Mother in the world of soul. Before that, he'd been stuck in this self of mind. Extinction seemed to be the only escape, but even he couldn't find the way to extinction. And out of that aspiration, he was invited into the realm of soul. And there, at the end of that canto, he had a vision of her as if just half parting her veil. He sees her eyes. You remember that, no? And that very, very powerful experience somehow enables him to enter to the next level of consciousness, the kingdoms of the greater knowledge. But even there, he didn't find her. And that's why he felt all that the world can give is not enough. No? He was longing for that presence. But instead he got the experience of the unknowable. So and that seems like an ultimate experience. And that's why he seems to be facing the whole extinction of himself that has performed this quest, that has yearned for her and adored her. All that's just going to be wiped away. But he thinks it can't be like that. No, that's this. There must be this everlasting yes. There must be this solution to the mystery.
So the mother, in his path, was revealed at a certain time on this path.
Yes.
Does that mean that the mother was not in our realm?
Not in a material body, no.
No, no,
no. But she had been, actually, if we look at it very carefully, we can see that throughout his whole yoga, from Canto 3, Book 1, Canto 3 onwards, she has been there guiding him as wisdom, as inspiration, and in certain states, you know, that seem very delightful, giving him the sense that it's not enough, something is missing. So she's been revealing herself to him in different ways, but since that experience in the world of soul, he knew that she is the answer to everything and the one that his soul worships.
But she was also revealed or led, stimulated, blessed, other than he.
He says she is the lover's everlasting yes. She is the absolute power that says yes to everything. No? And here he's having that, he's really experiencing that. It's not an understanding or an intuition or anything like that. It's a complete, overwhelming experience.
But going back to when you started, that's what I'm interested in.
Yes.
That he has been helped by her.
Yes. Before.
But has she been helping everybody else that he knows?
She's the mother. She's nourishing and creating everything.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She didn't suddenly appear when he.
No.
No.
No. So when it said, on the, just a few lines back, in absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. She is that absolute power. And now that absolute power is revealing itself. And it reveals itself in this wonderful way. It comes out of the silence of the ultimate calm, out of the very, very heart of this unknowable transcendence appears this body, a form, a translucent form. And he recognizes that this is like a summary, summing up of herself, which is escaping into the original bliss. But this form has come to him. And as she comes, infinite and absolute, a being of wisdom, power, and delight, she embraces everything. Nature, world, soul. She says yes to everything with her infinite love.
I'm mixed up in time here.
Why? We are beyond time here. Here we're beyond time and space.
Yes, but I didn't say the G word.
No, he's had a hint of this presence before. That's why he's been yearning for it. And now he experiences it much more powerfully than he ever has before, much more totally, because he's experienced this liberation of the self.
And he sees her embracing all
feels her embracing everything.
But she's always been embracing all.
Yes, yes. That's what we have to remember, that all this is his psychological experience. Before he knew that she was, but he didn't always feel it. No? If we go back to the beginning of Canto 1 of Book 3, at the bottom of the page, line 23, it speaks about a being intimate and unnameable, a wide, compelling ecstasy and peace felt in himself and all, and yet ungrasped, approached and faded from his soul's pursuit, as if forever luring him beyond. Near, it retreated. Far, it called him still. Nothing could satisfy but its delight. Its absence left the greatest actions dull. Its presence made the smallest seem divine. When it was there, the heart's abyss was filled. But when the uplifting deity withdrew, existence lost its aim in the inane. So it's our experience, no, that it's like this. Sometimes we feel close to the divine or to our soul, and sometimes it's as if it's very, very far away. It's not really that it's far away, it's that something in us has closed up and become less receptive. So all the rest of the canto is about the Divine Mother, about her presence. Wonderful description of her. You can read, Patty. Abolishing the signless emptiness. It's after took to her breast nature and world and soul. That's line 86. Now 87.
Abolishing the signless emptiness. Breaking the vacancy and voiceless hush, piercing the limitless unknowable, into the liberty of emotionless depth, a beautiful and political success for the power, the light, the bliss, the world can speak, imaged itself in a surprising dream, and built a golden passage to the heart, touching through him all longings and dreams. A moment's sweetness of the all beautiful cancels the vanity of the cosmic world. And nature's loving with a heart to heart was felt in the unconscious dream. We made the breath a happy mixture. A love that bore the cross of pain and joy. We demonized the sorrow of the world. Made happy the weight of long unending time. The secret thought.
Thank you. So this is what he actually experiences. He, at the end of Canto 1, he was feeling this infinite, eternal, unthinkable alone. And then this gives him the feeling that he's facing the extinction of his whole being, of his soul and everything. No. Suddenly that presence that he's been yearning for comes close. And that abolishes that signless emptiness, that extinction that he thought he might have to merge into. It breaks that vacancy and voiceless hush, and it pierces that unknowable. It's like a dawn coming, you know, creeping in, stealing in this beautiful and felicitous luster, this light which is bringing happiness with it. And that light, it's as if it makes a one golden beam which touches his heart, and then he realizes the way that he's connected with everything in the universe, touches through him all longing sentient things. All sentient things are longing in the material world. She's filling their longing. And when he has that experience, then this sense that the universe is just empty and meaningless, that gets cancelled away. No, it's not that the universe is vanity. All the universe is full of this heart, this divine heart. The whole unconscious universe is just the throbbing of that heart. And that makes even breathing in and out, is just a wonderful mystery. We are breathing in the mother's being, the divine being, breathing it out again. All this is the divine. And of course, here in the world, there's so much pain and suffering because of our separation and limitations and imperfection and ignorance. But there's a love which is experiencing that pain along with us. It is bearing the cross of pain, but it's doing it joyfully and willingly. And when he sees that, this eudaimonized, it brought a good spirit. It turned the whole meaning of all this suffering, this sorrow of the world, so that this long wait of unending time, everything that's taking so long, if we realize that the mother is with us on this journey, then it can be a happy journey. It's because of this presence, the sense of this presence, he can feel the delight of the divine enjoying everything that happens in the universe. You want to read, Audrey?
Affirming in life a hidden ecstasy, it held the spirit to ease in miraculous course, carrying immortal values to the hours, justified the labor of the sun. For one was there supreme behind the God, a mother might. Rooted on the world, consciousness revealed its marvelous form, transcending all that is, denying none.
Imperishable.
Of above our fallen heads, he felt a rapturous and unstumbling force. The undying truth appeared, the enduring power of all that here is made and then destroyed, the mother of all Godhead and all strength, who mediatrix binds earth to essence, binds earth to the supreme.
Thank you. So this it is what? 906. 908. I think it is a nature on page at the bottom of page 312. Yeah, I think it's the same thing. But grammatically, maybe we can trace it to line 98. This nature throbbing with a heart divine was felt in the unconscious universe. And that's what made the breath a happy mystery. And it's that nature which holds the spirit to its miraculous course. But of course, that nature is the power, the light, the bliss no word can speak. It's that nature which actually gives immortal values to the hours and justified the labor of the suns. If we only see this lower nature, all this may seem to be meaningless. But if we see the divine nature inhabiting and working through all this, then everything is justified. So this is the golden bridge, the connection, the mediatrix, no? Who binds earth to the supreme. You read, Rosa?
Of from sin and without
Thank you. Where did we get that recording? There's a CD in Margaret's room, and if you remind me tomorrow, I'll give it for next time. Yeah. Anything to ask?
I want to make a comment that it is also the Divine Mother. So he's kind of speaking of the Divine Mother in an impersonal term.
Yes, yes. But here, when we go down now in what we read just now, in line 120, we've got this it. I think this refers to the nescience in the previous line. But that nature throbbing with a heart divine, that is the Divine Mother, yes.
So the nescience has perverting will.
Yes, the fact that we don't know gives rise to falsehood. It's not just ignorance. Combined with the life force, then there's the ignorant desire comes. All because of the nescience comes error, and out of error comes falsehood.
So this disguised by its own work is the yoga mind.
Yeah, all this is the works of that wisdom, but all these appearances disguise her from us.
No? All that is done in the universe, the Divine Three Shaktis behind all action, and veils by the yoga mind.
Yes.
Works through the ego of the jiva. This is the whole action veiled by his
yes.
yoga mind.
All this is the veil, all of us are the veil. No?
Knowledge and ignorance
coincide no more. So there's something in her presence which reconciles all the opposites. All opposites. Actually, this appearance that knowledge and ignorance are striving, it belongs to our level of consciousness. Otherwise, we see that ignorance is a growing knowledge, a seeking, and but that's not opposites. But in our world, we are ruled by this enigma of duality. Yes.
A question, two false being, compliance being, repentance, the yoke of the soul, so it is between duality.
Yes, it's okay. The twofold screen is the fact that we see everything dual, you know, instead of one. I think that's what it is. Yes, Aunt Im is right. Along with this canto, we should be reading Sri Aurobindo's little book, The Mother, where all this is stated in other wonderful language. Or spirit
all
and matter.
All the
dualities. So it's those opposites, the opposition, the division, the separation, and all the dualities. This imposes their screen, throwing their figures, all these distorted figures, you know, between us and her. We experience the world in another way.
The words that we had read before, I just want to make sure. Line 110. A mother vine rooted upon the world. And the word rooted can have the meaning of, you know, something which is bothering and troubling you, or it's a mother hen sitting on her eggs and taking care of the young.
Yes. Actually, the meaning is the same. You know, the mother hen, when she's sitting on her eggs, she goes into a kind of trance-like state. Often she doesn't eat or drink or anything. She just sits on her eggs. That's her job. She has to wait there until they are ready to hatch. So when we use it in the other sense, it's a psychological use of the image. Somebody's brooding. They can't pay proper attention to anything else because they've got some problem on their mind, and until they've got the solution, they won't be fully with us, you know. So here it gives this marvelous image of the mother like a great big mother bird. She's brooding over the world, and all her wonderful creations are going to hatch, you know, they're going to come out. Anybody knows Maggie Leitch's book, Earth Man?
Yes.
Yeah. So at the end of that, there's a wonderful vision that he has, the hero has, of the mother hen and all the beings underneath her wings. And he suddenly understands, like Aswapati understands, what it's all about. It changes his life completely. So let's just read a little further. Who's next? Marianne.
No more existence seems an endless war. Extinction was no more the soul it is. The hidden world was found. The long sought truth revealed was the meaning of our spirit birth. Condemned to an imperfect body and mind, in the inconscience of material things and the indignity of moral life, of mortal life, the heart was felt in the spaces wild and bare, a burning love from white spiritual towns, unnerved the soul of the ignorant death, suffering from loss in her immortal smile. The light from beyond grew into her ear of death. To bear no more was natural to mind. One would not come where all was light in Rome.
Thank you. So I like to focus on this question, on in this sentence, starts on line 134. Revealed was the meaning of our spirit's birth, condemned to an imperfect body and mind in the inconscience of material things and the indignity of mortal life. Existence may seem like an aimless fall if we are aware of an immortal spirit within ourselves. We wonder, what on earth is it doing here? How has it come here? Why has it come here? No? When we understand the meaning, why has our spirit taken birth in the material universe? And accepted this imperfect body and mind, limited by the inconscience of material things and the indignity of mortal life. There are so many things about a life which is subject to matter and therefore to death, which is an indignity, some kind of very undignified, shameful state for the spirit, which should be master and free of its environment. No? So Asvapati feels that this meaning, the significance, why would the spirit accept this? This has now been revealed. Just through the simple presence of the mother. So I think we'll stop there for today.
Only the everlasting north has neared and stared into the eyes and killed thy heart. But where is the lover's everlasting yes? And immortality in the secret heart, the voice that chants to the Creator far, the symbol of the great ascending word. Abolishing the signless emptiness, breaking the vacancy and voiceless hush, piercing the limitless unknowable into the liberty of the motionless depth. A beautiful and felicitous luster stole, imaged itself in a surprising beam, and built a golden passage to his heart, touching through him all longings. Sentient things. A heart was felt in the space wide and bare, a burning love from white spiritual fount, annulled the sorrow of the ignorant depths. Suffering was lost in her immortal